Welcome to the True Sales Podcast. My name is Adam Cox, and this is a show where I get to speak all things sales with leaders, founders, owners, and directors. I'll be speaking to guests from all over Australia, getting their thoughts on subjects like sales processes, strategies, coping with setbacks, and establishing and maintaining the right mindset.
I'm excited to announce this week's guest, Noah Cohen. He's a successful sales trainer and coach, and someone who is highly passionate about sales. Noah came to Australia as a refugee 20 years ago and couldn't speak English. Even at such a young age, Noah decided to take himself out of his comfort zone by taking a telephone-based opportunity in a pizza shop just to improve his speaking skills. It was from here where his passion for sales began. Moving forward to present time, Noah is now a highly successful sales trainer, helping organisations increase their sales performance and, most importantly, increase their revenue. We speak all things sales, as well as how Noah helped an organization increase their sales by 7%, which equated to an increase in revenue of $840,000 in just 4 months.
Hello, Adam.
Hey, Noah. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Yeah, really good. Thanks, mate. Really good. Thanks for your patience.
That's okay.
Oh, good. Well, thank you for joining me on the True Sales Podcast. I think I mentioned to you before, what I tend to do is, if you've listened to other podcasts, I usually do a brief introduction to the guests for the sake of the audience. But just for the sake of the audience, just give us a bit of a brief overview of your background, experience and current positions.
Yeah, definitely. So I'll just start by giving you a short background. I think your listeners would want to get something out of it as quick as possible. So I'll keep it short. I've been in sales training and involved with businesses, operations to set up sales teams for about 10 years, working with salespeople, sales professionals, sales managers for just about over 10 years now, kind of helping them put better sales processes together and really optimize the conversations that they have, improved the conversations, put follow-up processes together. And very much, I guess, in a nutshell, I'm a sales guy.
Yeah,
because I said that I've always been in sales. I love it. I love doing it. I love teaching it. And I guess that's it. I've never really done anything else.
Yeah,
so sales is the bread and butter for me.
No, brilliant. And so in terms, so you say sort of your sales guy. So where did it all start for you?
All right. So just to give you a little bit of a quick background, I came to Australia with my two sisters and my mom. We came to Australia as refugees about 20 years ago and obviously couldn't speak English. And we eventually went through the whole thing and came to Sydney. And my first job was actually in a pizza shop where I was just picking up the phone and answering calls.
Wow.
On Tuesdays, it was so quiet. I said to the shop owner, I said, it was actually in towards Northern Beaches, Sydney.
Yeah.
I said, why don't I call your regular customers? And he said, what do you mean call my customers? We're a pizza shop, we don't call people. I said, look, they're gonna call anyway, let me just call. I was just purely out of boredom.
Yeah,
I picked up the phone and I called, and then through there it was just the upsell. It was the extra topping, it was the garlic bread, it was the extra Coke and things like that. And then over 3 months we just increased sales for him for about $1,800. And
wow.
Then that just became a thing that it did. And I guess, like a lot of people, I fell into sales by accident.
Yeah.
I would say I chose and I loved it from the beginning, but I fell into it by accident. And then I just kind of knew that dealing with people was a thing that I loved doing. I would say selling is just, it just became a habit.
Mm.
And then just from there, it just went on and on and on and on. And that's how it started.
Wow. And that took some guts to be able to pick up the phone if you couldn't speak English and then going into a telephone-based position. It says a lot about you as your character.
Yeah. When I started jumping on the phone, because I was so detached from the outcome, I wasn't going there. I wasn't making calls to make sales. I was literally just doing it because I was there. I was getting paid anyway. I was around friends and I was just bored. So I was purely out of boredom because there was not much pressure. Like back then with social media, it wasn't really a big thing. The pressure on sales wasn't a big thing. Or even if it was, I didn't know because I was younger. I wasn't in industry. I wasn't in sales. I had no idea.
Yeah.
The whole thing, I just picked up the phone and just had a conversation to people. Hey, you're going to order this anyway. Why not do something else? So that's how I kind of started thinking about the why not customers, which I guess down the track, and in a couple of minutes we'll talk about that as well.
Yeah, no, perfect. And then, so when did you know sort of sales training and coaching was something that you wanted to do and go into? Was it something that happened in your career that was like a light bulb moment?
Sure, it was. I think when I was managing a sales team of about 19 people, I was working for a third-party company where we were selling insurance, and this goes back to maybe just over 9 years ago. I was managing a sales team of 19 people, and then I wanted to make a few changes. I wanted to, I guess, offload the knowledge a little bit differently, do a bit training differently. But yeah, because the business had already had processes in place, it was really hard to change things. That's when I said, you know what, I'll just save up some money and then get out there and see if I can give it a crack by myself. So I did that, handed in my resignation after a year and a half, and then I started it. So that's how it all started.
Okay, brilliant. And in regards to what was your sort of initial challenges to start with when you first went out on your own? Did you find it difficult? Was there any challenges at all?
To be honest with you, I think like any other entrepreneur, if you may call that, when I went out there, I was so passionate about what I wanted to do. Everything was there. But as soon as I entered the market, I got my teeth kicked in, so to speak, because I knew about my craft. I knew what I wanted, but I didn't know much about how to actually scale it, commercialize that and sell it and get people to pay for it. That was the initial challenge, and the finance side of it was difficult because I had the people that wanted to pay for it, friends who own businesses, but commercialization of it was a little bit difficult. But straight away, I just went into head in the books and do some courses and start speaking to people. I guess I realized that early on, and I guess did something about it. Yeah.
Okay. No, excellent. And so. When you've got an opportunity to work with a particular business and you are training a sales team, where do you identify the areas that need improving initially? Do you have a set process that you follow with each client?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess the process is you do a really, I guess, a deep dive into the business. When you sit down with them, what they initially tell you is never the problem. And I found out quite early on, it's kind of like going to a doctor. Doctor always asks a lot of questions to really get to the root cause of the problem. And I spend a lot of time with business owners and general managers and some of CEOs, really have good conversations in terms of, yes, I know you want more sales, but what is the actual problem? Yeah. So I have a really good conversation with them. I spend some really, like a decent amount of time with the team leaders, with the sales managers, to find out what it is that they do on a day-to-day basis. So I shadow them for about a couple of weeks in their business, depending on the size of the business. And I try to understand first from the CEO or a general manager, what are your business goals? And then I cross-reference that with the level of activity and the type of activity that the sales force is actually putting into their day-to-day. And do they match? You know what I mean? If they don't match, I mean, my job is actually pretty easy, to be honest, once I found out what the actual gap is.
Yeah. So from your point of view, seeing it from an outsider's perspective, I take it you can see it a lot easier where the problem lies. But I guess from if you say, for instance, it was a sales director and he's looking at the business and he's in there day in, day out, I suppose it's quite difficult for them to identify those areas.
Yeah, well, it really depends. It depends if to the size of the business, how long the business has been in place. Is it a mature? Is it a scaling? So it really depends. A lot of the businesses that I've worked with, they have commercial managers, general managers, and sales managers who are very seasoned. They know what they want and they know where the business is heading and they're very clear on what they want. It's just the capability of training.
Okay.
That becomes a little bit of a tricky thing for them because they have previous high performers who have now, after training some of them, become team leaders.
Yeah.
So they don't necessarily have that knowledge to be able to offload that training or they just don't have the time, to be honest with you, to really train the trainer and bring someone up. And another thing with that is that a lot of businesses invest externally and send their people to external courses, one-day training, two-day training, three-day training and whatnot, which is good. I mean, it's good for morale and it's good for, I guess, as a reward. And sometimes it does add a lot of value.
Yeah.
But the problem with that, what I found out is the reinforcement side of things.
Mm.
How do you make sure that that's what they've learned becomes process and scalable? I always tell business owners, if you were to open an office in a different city, can you pick up and go there and give your training to someone else? And will they be able to train? If not, You need to go back to the drawing board. And that's where I find that that's what they need help in structuring their training, teaching it in a way that's retainable for the new starter or the seasoned salespeople.
Yeah. And I found from personal experience as well, when you do the 1-2 day courses, as much as you realize it's quite easy, you know it's the right way of doing it and it's the right process. But when you get back to the real world, it quite easily gets forgotten and everyone goes back to normal ways, just a force of habit, I guess. And I take it from when you're going in there, you're spending a lot more time with the sales professionals, the leaders, in order for them to really implement it on a long-term basis rather than being short-term. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. It's because it's habit. If you've done a certain thing, anything, if you've done anything for a period of time, then doing something differently once or twice is not really going to go and help you. Because, look, to be honest with you, we are not designed, human beings are not designed to challenge and stretch themselves. We're always designed to do the comfortable thing, and that's what we do. So when an external sales training or any sort of training, you get excited, the motivation levels jump, but the skill is not quite, I guess, burnt into the memory. That's where I find out a lot of business owners spend a lot of money, but they don't really see long-term results. The scalability is not quite there for them. And that, I guess that is one of the reasons as well, because I went to so many different sales training sessions. And then when I came back, when I was learning, the training went at the bottom of the drawer. Yes, I still remember, but it didn't become process, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, sure. No, definitely know what you mean. And so in terms of the process that you follow, then, because I noticed on there's a piece on your LinkedIn saying that you took a company from within a 4-month engagement, it was a medium sized company, you increased their sales by 7%, which would equate to $840,000. So what was their issues you found when you went in there, and what did you do to actually change that? Because that's quite a dramatic increase in such a short period of time, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I guess the challenge there was the message that was coming from being forecasted by the CEO, by the general manager, and to the sales managers. Mm. It wasn't really being enforced in terms of everybody was just pretty much being told, look, yesterday we couldn't hit target and today we're just going to hit target. And then let's just go on and go see what happens. I mean, as cliche, as simple as that sounds, that was basically happening in the business. So initially what happened was I spent a lot of time with the top performers in that business, because I knew that I had a small window to improve sales for them, hopefully improve sales for them. We really tried to understand what are this group of people doing, that people who are basically, we looked at people who are between 190% to 120% of target, and then we compared them to people who are 60 to 80%. Right. And I said to myself, what are these top performers doing that these middle performers are not doing? Right. Yeah. And it was the same thing, just being consistently implemented. It was habit. It was process that the middle performer wasn't doing, where a lot of the times the team leaders and the commercial manager would say, look, what about the bottom performers? Why don't we just spend some time coaching them? The way I've always looked at it is your bottom performers need to be managed. Your middle performers need to be coached, and your top performers, because they're constantly stretching themselves, they need to be given positive feedback every single day. What are you doing that works, and why is that effective? Yeah. The fact that that's not being done in a lot of businesses, that's why so many top performers leave the business and the middle performers and the bottom performers are left doing the job. So we implemented a constant feedback process where we listened to a lot of the top performance calls and we gave them constant feedback. I guess that's a twofold thing. We also worked with the marketing side of things and we looked at what sort of leads are coming in, what time of the day they're being called, and what sort of conversations they're having. And then through that, we realized that the follow-up process was not nearly as good as it should have been. What I mean by that is, they were calling somebody 2 or 3 times and then they were burning that lead and they're saying, look, it's just not interested. Whereas we know, we're working with a lot of businesses, a lot of the sales happen between the 8th and the 12th contact. If you're burning leads on the 5th contact because they're just not interested, because they're just not answering, then you're missing out.
Yeah, right, so there was no referral process. Sure. And what do you think the reason is behind salespeople doing that? Is it because I refuse to think it's laziness. I think it's down to getting to a point of a reason to call at that 8th, 9th, 10th time without becoming a nuisance, if you know what I mean.
But then I also think
sometimes I've been in companies where they haven't had the right CRM system for you to be able to follow that up, and there's leads that are getting falling through the net because the system's not right. So what do you think the problem is there?
All of those. Like CRM is a big thing. I've worked with a lot of businesses who use Salesforce, right? Yeah. And Salesforce, some of them use it well, some of them don't use it well, depending on the size of the business and how much money they want to pump into that CRM to be able to improve its capabilities for the business. Yeah. But yes, it does go to the reason of the call. But what I always try to explain to salespeople is that follow-up doesn't always need to have a call to action. Okay. So what I mean by that is you don't necessarily need to keep calling people and saying, hey, I'm just following up to make sure that you need any help, or you leave that in a voicemail, or you send the same thing in an email or a text message, or you just call and tell them, I'm just following up. I'm just following up. How are you going? Did you talk to your wife, husband, business partner? It's the same thing, right? Whereas the way I look at follow-up is this. You need to be able to stay top of mind, front of mind. Right. Yeah. So whether that is sending your company review, how you've disrupted the market, every time they look at the text messages, phone, email, online, your name needs to be present.
Yeah.
So the moment they're ready with a call to action that's in front of them, they pull the trigger.
Yeah.
I'm a huge believer that 100% of leads will convert. You just have to be there when they're ready to pull the trigger.
Yeah. Right. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
So you mentioned about the top performers and the habits that they sort of instill to maintain that top performance. But what are those habits that they are doing that the average and the not so average are not doing?
Like I said, consistency. They have a process.
Yeah.
Right. They have a process that works for them. They don't muck around with it. They just keep doing the same thing over and over and over again because it gets results. Right.
And is that down to script or is that down to call volume or
both? You need quality and quantity, right? You need to fill the top of your funnel. You need to basically make enough calls to be able to get enough leads. Depending on your industry, it just depends, right? Yeah. How many calls do I need to get? A lot of salespeople concentrate on a number of calls they make as opposed to how many conversations they have. Okay. Right. So In a contact center environment, they call it the dial, a contact, a pitch, and an appointment or a sale, right?
Yeah.
You need to be able to know what your conversion rate is. But going back to your question, what are those things that salespeople do, the top performers?
Yeah. It's
consistency. They know what they do. They know what it is that gets them results.
Yeah.
If you ask the salesperson, why do you think that happened, who's always hitting over and above their target, they know. They're never going to tell you, oh, that was just a fluke. That person was ready to buy anyway. And that's the type of answer you will get from an inconsistent salesperson when they get an inbound call who's ready to buy. And I always tell them, they're so easy to muck up those calls. It's so easy to make a customer who's ready to buy angry if you don't know what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I've worked in a similar situation myself. So the average and the low performers then, why is it that they find so difficult to do what the top performers are doing? Because it seems like a real simple sort of method that they're following is just consistency and making sure they're doing the right things at the right time. Where do you think they're going wrong? And do you think it can be trained?
It can be. I think sales can be trained. Passion cannot be trained. And to me, being passionate is the number one thing that you need to either be or have or possess or whatever you want to call it in sales. Because it gets so hard, and this is not mine, Steve Jobs said this, you have to do it, you have to love what you do so much because it gets so hard that if you don't love it and if you're not passionate about it, you're going to quit.
Yeah.
Right? That's what he said. And I really believe in that because that's number one. Bottom performers quite often, they get disheartened too quick. And I guess the main reason is they underestimate how much effort it takes to get results.
Yeah.
That's not their fault. It's sales manager needs to basically explain to them. They need to be given very specific targets, very specific tools and scripts. Once you know, once you start getting dependable and predictable results, that's when I take the training wheels off. Not after two sales. I don't just give you a high five and a pat on the back. I will give you very specific feedback on what it is that you did and why it worked. Once you understand that, then I can expect you to replicate it. So what I always ask sales managers, stop high-fiving your people just because they got good results. Why did that happen? Do you or do they know that? If they don't, then there's something missing.
Yeah, so it's all very sort of measured in regards to the processes and then making sure that it's then so it becomes a force of habit, I take it, eventually.
Exactly. It just becomes a process. It just happens over and over and over again. If I was to ask you to cross your arms, you would do it the same way every single time.
Yeah.
But if I was to ask you to put the other arm over the other arm, you would get confused. And I challenge you to do that. You would get confused because it's just force of habit. It takes somebody to constantly be there with you, coach, train, and support you.
Of course, of course. And you mentioned marketing already. So in terms, has your, over the space of the I think you said 10 years in terms of the sales training that you've done so far, has the training changed with the likes of social media and the inbound marketing that the sales are so much are expected a lot of the time? Has your training actually changed to accommodate that?
Surprisingly, very little.
Yeah,
because a lot of my sales training has been inside sales and on the phone, and I still to this day believe that phone selling is still the most, direct way to get in front of someone.
Yeah,
right.
Completely.
I mean, you can still send, you can still do Instagram ads, LinkedIn ads, Facebook ads, Google ads, banner ads. I mean, you can do different digital media ads till cows come home, and they are all very effective ways of doing it if it's done right. Mm. But I still believe that phone selling, inside sales, and mastering the art of selling on the phone without being too cliche is still the most effective way of doing it, because you're touching somebody exactly where you want them and where they're ready to have a conversation with you. I guess, has the training changed with social media? Very little. Very little, because people are people are people. People are never going to change.
I completely agree, and you see so many arguments on LinkedIn, for instance, of cold calling or calling it full stop. Some companies claim that they don't do any calls at all with the likes of inbound marketing. Because I personally think it's people that don't want to do it or are no good at it. But do you think that that is the case? Do you think because I personally think that I'm on the same agreement as yourself. I think calling it itself is probably the most direct and fastest way to build a relationship with someone than any other way and more cost effective. Yeah. So what do you think that argument is there in terms of the calling aspect of it? Is it predominantly people that don't want to do it?
I mean, LinkedIn is LinkedIn. There are different opinions and I respect it, and that's why I love LinkedIn and I'm so active on it. I mean, if you are not doing any cold calling and if your primary way of generating leads and sales is through digital media, Facebook ads or any other medium of digital marketing, then good for you. Then go all in 100%. But be very warned that once that channel slows down, you are, as a business, you are very vulnerable because you haven't diversified the way you reach out into the market.
Yeah.
Right? If you're not consistently... investing in your inside sales, whether it's inbound or outbound or follow-up, then you're putting so much money. And even with digital marketing, I've worked with brilliant minds when it comes to digital marketing. There's only so much money that you can put in before increasing the cost per lead.
Yep.
Right? Yep. There's only so many people in the niche that you're trying to, in your narrow niche, depending on how wide or narrow that is, there's only so much money that you can put in there unless you want to restructure your Facebook ad account and have multi-ad accounts. You can do all of that, but you need to diversify. Train your people to be able to respond to different types of leads through different mediums. That's how you win.
Yeah, of course. And I was just going to ask you there, is it a different type of call from your point of view when you're training people to take an inbound lead, as opposed to trying to convert it from an outbound? So 100%. You train them to completely way different ways.
Yeah, look, the approach, the reason for the call would be different because one, you have to generate interest. The other one, interest already exists. The attention is already there. If I've picked up the phone and I say, hey, I want to buy a bicycle, it's very different to you knowing that I love bicycles, but I've never inquired. Then you call him and say, hey, you might love bicycles. So yes, the approach is a little bit different. But essentially, once we go past the, I guess, generating interest and grabbing their attention, everything else stays the same. You still need to be able to sell. You still need to be able to either, you need to do two things, either discover pain or discover aspirations, because not everybody has a pain they want to solve. Some people just have hopes and aspirations, and that's what a lot of salespeople don't basically don't explore. They think, oh, look, our product is more expensive. It doesn't do what the current provider does, so we're not going to be able to sell. Hey, do they really want to? What about improvement? What about hopes and aspirations? What about growth? Have you talked about that? And that's what a lot of salespeople don't feel comfortable doing.
No, completely agree. No, it's interesting. So in terms of sales leadership then, so for what's your, obviously you've worked in a number of businesses now to see what a good leader is, but what are your thoughts on what makes a good leader? What is a good sales leader now?
Years ago, I used to work for a, without naming names, I used to work for a gym. And we knew there was a new manager coming on, and I've always been exposed to different managers coming on, and they pull you into a room and say, hey, what do you want? Promises, some very good, some they don't follow up. What I found out with this particular manager was he was just holding a coffee. I vividly remember I was introduced by the club manager to this new assistant manager, and he said, let's go get some leads. And he didn't pull rank. He pretty much came down exactly where we were. He did exactly what we did. And he just showed us that it can be done without actually telling us, hey, let me just show you. He just pretty much did it.
Yeah.
And that, to this day, that still resonates with me that, again, without being cliche, you need to lead by example. And sometimes people struggle to understand what that is. They try to get too fancy. Yep. It's not about being fancy. It's just putting your head down and just doing what it is that you expect other people to do and understanding that if you've hired someone, you know that they are capable or you hope that they're capable. So they have the intelligence or they have the foresight to see, hey, that works. I'm going to do that. If not, then maybe you need to change your hiring profile. Maybe you're just hiring the wrong type of people.
Yeah, sure. So those sort of traits are sort of leading by examples. Because I find I've worked in businesses in the past myself where someone's been promoted based on their sales performance and not necessarily because of the leadership skills. And it's kind of like a double-edged sword where they're not given enough time to actually get the sales team up and running to the level that is expected of them. They're not given any training. And obviously coming from a very selfish role themselves, from being good at sales, they still get given, they're still expected to hit their own targets as well as lead a team. And I've found it never works. And does that, and I'm talking obviously from my recruitment background there, but does, is that the same in terms of the companies that you go into where people are being promoted on the back of their own accomplishments? Are they still expected to have targets themselves a lot of the time? And how do you find that works?
It's getting better over and over. I think a lot of business owners and managers, senior managers, they're realizing that they can't. It's just not reasonable for me to expect to you hit your own sales targets while you're managing people. And if they're not, they should. But look, there is a positive side to that story because the businesses do promote and every salesperson wants to be promoted. So that's the good thing. I guess where things could fall apart is that when the reality, just like me starting my own business and the reality kicked me in my mouth, the same thing is going to happen to a team leader because the motivation will wear out. Because there were this top performer who is now being given this added pressure of being in charge of other people's performance. And how are you going to, how are they going to deliver on that? Because they don't, they haven't been given the tools and the responsibilities or the knowledge. And what I said to you earlier was on purpose that a lot of TLs think that they are in charge of other people's performance. What they need to start thinking about is I'm in charge of people who are in charge of the numbers,
yeah.
Right? So what I mean by that is that you need to maintain that human connection.
Yeah.
Feedback, what it is that they did. Again, what do you do every single day that works? Because if I can do that again, then my job gets a little bit easier.
Yeah. Perfect. And for, I take it feedback in terms of the team for the leader as well, I'd imagine as well. Is that, would you say so?
It works in everywhere because we're human beings. We thrive on communication and it needs to be both ways. I guess if you're talking about culture and performance, they go hand in hand, right? Yeah. That's why when you look at a business, I mean, look at a performer. You start a job, you've been a good performer in a previous business. You get a job that you think is a step up.
Yeah.
And then you're flying, and then over 3 months you crash and burn.
Yeah,
because the novelty, the excitement is worn out. But the doors of feedback back and forward either way is closed.
Yeah,
right. In the first couple of months, all they talk about is how are you getting on, are you settling in, how are you finding things, and they get to know each other. But specifically, after 3 months specifically, there is no specific feedback. And that's why things fall apart. And the guy turns around and says, well, what happened to me? Yeah. And they don't know. And that they become complacent and then they stay in the business. And if they're not managed well, then they stay there for years. And that becomes a problem for the business owner and the performance in the business.
Sure. And how many times have you gone into an organization where they've called you in to lift the sales, but it's actually been down to you've identified when it's the actual team leader or the manager that's in place that's actually the root of the problem? Has that happened at any time?
Very often.
Yeah.
Very often. Because when you look at it, I can teach you how to sell, right? And if I can't teach you straight away, I will figure out a way. That's what I do. I figure out what works and I teach it.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of I look at three things. I look at attitude, behaviors, and skills.
Yeah.
Do you have the attitude of being able to take feedback? Do you demonstrate behaviors of repeating what it is that you've been taught?
Yeah.
And do you have the skills, which I will give you, right? Yeah. A lot of the times, attitude and behavior is where things go wrong because there is nothing to tie back to. And that goes to the second thing that I really value is values, visions, and values in a company.
Yeah.
So number one is give your people specific set of targets that they know what it is that they're doing every single day, every single day, every single hour. They need to know what they're doing. And second thing, they need to know what your visions and values are in a company. Whether you're engineering, IT, or sales, specifically in sales, they need to know what behaviors do you demonstrate at work that will drive a certain type of behavior and certain type of performance.
Yeah.
They need to know if it's a high performance culture, what is your behavior? Yeah. What is the type of, vision that you are tying your people back to? And that I rarely, in the type of businesses that I've worked with, especially smaller types of businesses, between 1 to 20, 25 businesses, people in the business, that rarely gets communicated.
Yeah, yeah. And it is that down to the sort of the right at the top sort of communicating down, do you think?
100%.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. Leaders have their own, team leaders have their own types of behaviors and types of performance and motivation, but they don't really know. It's not really polished. Yeah. Why am I passionate? What do I care about? Do you really work with them? What type of person are you? Because once I know that, then I can bottle that. Then I can basically give it to other people.
Yeah. So from an organization's point of view or an owner of an organization, without bringing you in to identify that for them, how do you think they can improve the leadership of the business?
Keep them accountable is number one. Hire the right people, promote the right people. Don't just promote people because they're high performers.
Yeah.
It's a different sport. It's very different things. Just because you can sell doesn't mean you can coach. Just because you can manage a team, Noah, I'm talking to myself now, doesn't mean you can run a business.
Yeah.
And they're very different things. Yes, they're within the same realm, sales, but it's different. You are dealing with basically influencing people to behave a certain way. Right. Yes, you're selling your whatever it is, your vision and values, again, if you want to go that way. But influencing people that are getting paid to be in a business to behave a certain way is challenging, specifically if you're a new manager.
Yeah.
So I guess for a business owner, your question was, what is it that they need to do without bringing a third party in? Mm-hmm. give them very specific tools, very specific targets to meet, and every single day keep them accountable. I guess employ an agile method. What are we going for? What did we do yesterday? What are we going for today? And what's in our way blocking us? Every single day. What's in our way blocking us? And give them a chance to explain to you. What I've noticed is that a lot of business owners hear it, but they think it's an excuse. It very well may be an excuse, but you can't just block it. You need to be able to get them to just open up and talk about it and redirect as a business manager. And you still need to tell them, look, this is where we're going and this is how we're going to do it. Keep them accountable every single day.
Yeah, I find it quite funny because, I've worked in businesses where the communication's just not there, and it gets to a point where it's gone too far for them to pull it back. Do you know? They know there's an issue really early on, but never it's never dealt with there. And then it's always at a point where, right, it's disciplinary or we're sitting down and we're having harsh talks. It's never at a point of early on when they know when they've identified the real problem early on in the process.
And that's just a human behavior. We never stretch ourselves till our survival threat, right? I mean, I always tell people in my very first sales meetings in almost every business that I go to is, hey, put your hand up, and everyone puts their hands up halfway. Then I say, no, really put your hand up, and they put it up three quarters of the way. I have to ask them four or five times till they fully put their hands up, because we are not designed as human beings to stretch ourselves and go for it. I mean, it takes a special type of person. And the people who stretch themselves the first time are the people who have gone through that exercise previously, and they just click. The moment you said that, they just know, because there's been reinforcements. And that's what happens. You need to be able to coach, and you need to be able to tell them every single day what it is that you expect of them.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think that's a really, really great value there. So I wanted to talk to you about the, because I noticed you've got an idea that the 4-minute training that you the project that you're doing at the moment, is that where did that idea come from, and what's the plans for it and that type of thing?
I guess the idea came from myself. I went to so many sales. I've spent thousands of dollars going for different sales training sessions and coaching sessions and self-development and whatnot. But what happened was afterwards, I just didn't have access to it. And I went to YouTube and I wanted to learn something. I watch a 5, 10, 15, 20-minute video to get 2 minutes worth of content that often is not really useful, right? So I thought, how do I put, I guess, sales enablement? What I want to do is put the right type of training in the hands of the right people at the right times. And the only way that I can do that is put it in the pocket and in their hands where they use their phones, and make it short, sharp, and sweet and effective, where they can just, this is what I need, I got it, and move on. Yeah. So I guess the plans for it is, previously what I was doing, I was working with businesses on a 6-month, I guess, a 3 to 6 month project where I would go in there and try to help their business. And at the moment, what I'm trying to do is to basically develop a subscription model where people can subscribe to getting sales training in under 4-minute videos, where they get very specific tools, short, sharp, and sweet, where they can look at it from their mobile phone, tablets, or the computers anytime, any day.
Yeah, brilliant. And what kind of training will it be consist of? Is that live at the moment now, Noah, is it?
It's not live at the moment. I'm still recording the videos for it. It's about over 300 videos that I'm recording at the moment. It's going to be for, I guess, any salesperson. It's going to be for beginners. It's going to be for people who have been in sales. But it's also going to be for professional services, right? Accountants, lawyers. I've come across law firms who've developed the business development department. Because for years, they thought that, hey, you're going to court, you need compensation, whatever it is, you come to me. Now they're realizing that, hey, there's so many people out there, businesses like going like Legal Vision, they're making it very easy for people to use legal services. And they need to sell, right? What I'm really concentrating on is implementing sales process, follow-up, and sales process and follow-up for businesses to be able to follow up and close a sale down the track.
Yeah, No, that's brilliant. It's well, good luck with that. It sounds like a really good idea, and me for myself,
Thank
I'll
you.
Be pointing people in the right direction, or in your direction,
Thank
should
you.
I say?
So you
mentioned obviously the sales coaching and training that you've been on. Is it from a sales professional's point of view? Is there anyone that people should be following that or books that they should be reading that you could highly recommend?
Yeah, to be honest with you, sales is one of the oldest professions in the world. You know what I mean? From Brian Tracy's and Tom Hopkins and Zig Ziglar's and guys like that, not much has really changed. It's just people's ability to listen and just keep doing it, right? People don't stick to the same thing. We just want to change things quickly, right? Pick a sales process, any sales process, whether it's mine, somebody else's, anything on YouTube, just stick to it is my message. Pick a process and stick to it till you've mastered it. You can do it with your eyes closed. I guess, I mean, there's so many people. There is there's spin selling, there is Sandler, there is Rain. There's so many different businesses. It's just people need to stick to it and they need to get something that's consumable.
It makes me think because there's that many gurus out there that you could follow. And Brian Tracy for me was like back when I first got into recruitment, I actually came across him by accident on a shopping channel. And he sold me as soon as he started speaking. And I ended up buying a pack of his Psychology of Selling was his the original.
Yes.
And that was how old he was. He was all on CDs. But you're right in terms of sticking to it because it doesn't matter who you follow. Everyone's idea, it comes back to that consistency and those top performers that know what's right and they just keep doing it and doing it and doing it. And people are just looking for that quick win all the time and not willing to put the work in.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue. So, and like you say, there's that many out there in terms of leaders that you could be following. But it's just, I think in terms of sticking to one of them, I think is a good... it's good advice because I think people are just looking for that quick win all the time.
Yeah, it's just, again, it's human nature. I mean, we've all signed up for a gym membership and we've gone a couple of times and we've just thrown it aside. I think people just want to kind of feel good about taking action. Hey, I did something about it, right? They want to do the due diligence and they may want to buy a wallet. You say, hey, is it leather? Are you a leather expert? No, it's just something that you feel like you have to ask. So you feel like you have to improve because you saw a guy on YouTube or on Instagram talking rah-rah and he got your blood pumping and you went and did something about it, but they didn't stick to it. I guess it's okay. You can't force people. I can't force people to stick to it. So what I've done again is I've realized what's their process and what's the retention span, and I've created something and I'm trying to create something that fits that. Right. I mean, a lot of sales processes, and I'll talk about that in my sales training, selling process, which I've called the conversion booster, is you need to understand your sales process needs to fit the buying process. Every person out there has a buying process. And that sounds like things like, I need to think about it, send me some information, and I'll get back to you. They've developed that because of years of being exposed to inexperienced salespeople, not bad salespeople, just inexperienced. That makes them sound pushy. So they're like, you know what? Seems to work. I just keep doing the same thing. And you and I do it. Everybody that's probably listening to it has done it or keeps doing it at some stage. You go to a shop and say, hey, you know what? I'm just looking. Or I'll get back to you. That's our buying process. That's our buying process. So I'm trying to design something that fits people's learning style that's short, sharp, and sweet, that gets results, that's affordable, that hopefully they can access anytime that they want.
No, I think it's a brilliant idea, and there's not much out there because even I remember over the years, it's similar to yourself, where I'd search YouTube for videos, and there's very little on there, and the ones that are on there aren't great. I think it's a great idea, and like I say, I'll be definitely pointing people in your direction. So in terms of the audience, where's the best places to be able to get you? What's the platforms they can reach you on?
Look, what I suggest is if people want to do something, if they want to get, real value, is they need to go on www.cohentraininginstitute.com.au/subscribe. What happens is, as soon as they subscribe, they get access to a seven ways to increase your sales. It's like step-by-step strategies that people can implement. And every single Monday at 8 o'clock, I will email them a very specific technique, tool, or knowledge that they can apply in their business. I don't want their credit card details. I don't want anything from them. There is no links. There is no affiliates. It's just an email that you go, you read, and you just keep reading. That's pretty much it. So cohentraininginstitute.com.au/subscribe. Yeah. Obviously, you know, I'm also on Instagram. I've got a bunch of videos there, Cohen Training. And I'm also on LinkedIn. If you just look up Noah Cohen /sales, you will just pop up with just Noah Cohen, and you look for a sales guy, and that's me.
Fantastic. So I'll be promoting that for you as well, Noah, in terms of the site there. That's a fantastic offer that's free of charge, giving value. Who can turn that down? No, yeah, excellent. Thanks. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Noah. Really, like I said, there's a lot of insight there that people were going to get from the conversations, hopefully. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you, and all the best with everything that you do.
Appreciate it. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Noah.
Thank you.
You have a good evening. Speak soon. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye. You too.